I'm delighted to say that Ray and Vi Donovan join me in the studio now. Thanks ever so much for coming in. I would like to begin, if I may, with the story itself, because although it's a story that you have yourselves told many times, it's not necessarily a story with which many of the people listening will be automatically familiar. And I know you choose on your own website and in some of the literature of the organisation you've set up in memory of your son, Chris, you choose often to begin with a knock on the door, yeah. Ray, on the 26th of May 2001.
That's right, yeah.
And what happened next?
Well, I went downstairs and then there were two policemen at the door. And they asked me, was I Christopher and Phyllis' brother? We only lost two boys that night, not one. And I said, yes. They said they need to speak to me and Vi urgently. I took them upstairs. We got Vi out of bed. And they said, Chris and Phil's involved in a fight, which is not like our kids. And they need to get us to Epsom Hospital straight away. And when we got to the hospital, Philip and his friend Richard were in forensic clothing. And there was no sign of Chris. Then a policeman came over to us and said, Chris is in the operating theatre. They then put us in a pokey room, and it was nothing like casualty. There were no cups of tea and people around. We were just put in this room and left on our own.
What to wait?
Like, yeah, it was seemed like hours.
You were together, though?
Yeah.
The two of you?
Yeah, with Philip.
Philip stayed.
Yeah, he was seen to by casualty straight away, and his face, I must say, his face was all blooded and everything.
What did he tell you? What did he say to you when you arrived at the hospital?
Well, in the room, he told us they were walking along, and they were singing a song. It's 11 years this month it happened. And they were just walking along, and there's a hill. And as they were coming up this hill, coming the other side were 14 boys and girls. And they opened up, and Philip walked through first. And then one of the boys just smacked him in the face for no reason, broke his nose. Philip collapsed on the floor, and two started kicking him in the head. Christopher went to save his brother. Two boys got in front of him, backed him onto this main road, which is a four-lane A-road. Another got behind him and kicked him on the floor. And the three of them were stamping on his head and kicking him in the chest and everything. They ran away when they heard the police was coming. And a car came over the hill. And she ran over him. Well, what she said in court was she thought was a bundle of rags in the road. She ran over him. His belt caught in an exhaust pipe and she dragged him 40 feet down the road. And while we were hearing this, the doctors came in first and said he's lost a lot of oxygen to the brain. We're looking at severe brain damage. And then at 24 in the morning, they came back and said Christopher died in the operating theatre.
Vi, that must have been, I mean, it's impossible to even imagine what you went through, but I don't want to preempt what we're going to learn later, but you must have, well, the first thing you'd want to do, most mothers, would be to find the people who've done it and rip them to pieces.
Absolutely. I remember when they told me Chrissy died and I ran for the door. And I ran down this corridor and this policeman grabbed me and held me, this big man, and he said to me, we're going to get them. And I said, no, you're not, because you don't care. But you know what? I'm going to go kill them. I'm going to find them. I'm going to do to them what they did to Chris. I'm going to stamp on their head. And I was screaming at him in this corridor. And he took me back to this little room and we had to wait there because we had to go and identify him. And it was the most awful thing. And everything inside of you doesn't want to go in that room and say, yes, it's my son. And you just got to, and then it becomes real, because I didn't want it to be real. It's like you watch telly and it's everybody else, but it can't be you. And I was just getting so angry. When I went in there and saw what they'd done, it was the worst thing in the world. All I could feel was rage and anger. It was worse.
I find that incredibly easy to believe. Everybody listening will. What sort of lad was Chris? What sort of boy was he?
He was a fun loving lad. He didn't belong to a gang. He was hard working. He'd work up to 14 hours a day. He worked in a pizza parlour, well, a pizza shop, and he broke the record for delivering the most pizzas in a day. He got a watch and everything. He just loved life. At 15, he went to America on his own. And he'd do anything for anybody, wouldn't he?
Absolutely. He just loved life, loved talking to people, loved listening to people. He was the kind of person who... He'd just say, get on with it, Mum, if you were worried about something. Just get on with life. Don't stop worrying, you know. Just get on with it. Forget about it. You know, and he was a forgiving young man.
I ask the question because if you're aware that your son has got in with a bad bunch, or if you're worried about the path your son is following, then you probably conjure up in your mind the scenarios, the worst things that could happen. Of course, you wouldn't have done that because Chris was not in with a bad bunch or pursuing a gang-related path or anything like that. So I think that probably makes the shock tenfold.
Yeah. They were just doing what they do most weekends. They would go to a youth leader's house and stay there till about 2-3 in the morning, and she would drive them home. So we knew they were safe all the time, every weekend, didn't we?
They were hard-working boys, and they just enjoyed life. They didn't, you know, imagine anything like that could happen.
So you went home?
Yeah.
With Philip?
Yeah.
That night? By now, we're talking the small hours of the morning, aren't we?
Well, we hung around the hospital for hours. And I don't know if we never told you, we weren't allowed to touch Chris.
Why not? Because of the forensic?
Yeah, we weren't. Our friends at coroner said it becomes a crime scene. Our son's a crime scene. All the other people could touch him, but we couldn't touch him. And when we got to the coroner, in the car coming home, I turned to the van and said, you know, as Christians, we need to forgive. I won't tell you. You need to press your red button for the beeping.
I don't think I could repeat what I said. And I was so angry. I was riding on that anger. And I said, you know, you can't say that. I'm not going to forgive them. I'm never going to forgive them. I'm going to go kill them. Seriously, if they don't find them quick, I'm going to go look for them. And I was screaming at him in the car. And nobody wanted to talk to me after that because every time I opened my mouth, that's all I'd say.
I'm not surprised. I am, however, surprised, Ray, that you chose your moment. So, I was going to say clumsily, but it is... You were talking about the car home from the hospital when you said to your wife that as people who are of the Christian faith, then you had, a moral duty to try to forgive.
Yeah, we ain't been Christians all our life.
Right.
We became Christians in 96.
Okay.
And Chris was murdered in 2001.
So it was important to you, but not necessarily the foundations on which you'd built your entire life. Certainly not your life together as parents and as husbands and wives. Why do you think you wanted to say that so soon? Why do you think you wanted to articulate that to Vi so quickly, so soon after the event? Well, it was still really unreal in your mind.
Well, I'm an old Brixton lad, and I've been a few troubles myself. That's why I brought my kids up decent. And I knew that those boys didn't set out that morning and said, let's go kill Chris.
They didn't do that, yes.
No. And that's what made me think, you know. They didn't really set out and say, let's go kill Chris. It was a fight that went wrong.
But you were thinking that way already?
Yeah.
Even as the dust was still far from settled?
Yeah.
That's incredible. And I presume if you slept at all in the next 24 hours, when you finally did sleep, that awful thing that anyone who's been touched by tragedy will understand, for a moment when you woke up, you forgot.
Yeah, it was like a dream, wasn't it? Yeah.
It's not like the anger goes away. The anger's always there. But I think Ray chose at that moment not to live in it.
I was still angry.
He took that choice.
Yeah. I think if I met one of them at that moment, I would have smacked him and decked him, you know?
Sure. But your heart was talking to you in a different language.
Yeah. Mm. But, you know, what made it worse then, because it was bank holiday, we had to see the coroner on Tuesday. We went to the coroner's office. Again, we couldn't touch him.
Oh.
We had to have a policeman come in with us with our pastor to make sure we obey the rules. When we came out, my daughter went in with her husband, and the coroner said to me, well, to both of us, I've got bad news. I said, what could be worse than what we just seen? And she said, because of the car and the kicking, we had to prove or kill Chris. And to do this, we had to remove his brain and wait for this enzyme to come out. This was going to take you 16 weeks, and you can't bury Chris for 16 weeks. So we had to wait 16 weeks to bury our son. And people can't work that out. He was killed in May, and we buried him in September. And by the time the 16 weeks were up, we were told not to have an open coffin, weren't we?
Yeah. So we never really got to say goodbye properly.
No.
It's very tough.
It is, which makes what you've already hinted at all the more remarkable. We're up to the point where they were on their way home from the hospital where their 18-year-old son Christopher sadly didn't make it out of the operating theatre after being set upon randomly in the street and sustaining brain damage, which was that very night to prove fatal. And Vi describes herself as absolutely furious and hell-bent upon revenge when Ray decided to remind her, shall we say, that as Christians they had a duty to forgive. Now, I noticed you were keen to clarify the difference between, if you will, the words and the impulse, the words and the feeling. It's as if you knew what you had to do, Ray.
Yeah.
But you were by no means, I don't want anyone to think listening, that you thought it was going to be easy.
No. Like I said, if they would come near me that day and I'd have any weapon, I would have killed them.
So when did it start? When did your anger, and I'll ask Vi the same question because I think you've probably got different answers. When did your fury, your anger, begin to be redirected? Not necessarily dissipated, but not directed at the young people responsible for the attack on Christopher?
Well, to start with, it was very hard because in court they kept laughing at us.
What, the...
The boys, they, yeah, in the dock, they were laughing and joking, weren't they, love?
Mm.
And it was very hard. But then when they were found guilty, one of the fathers came up. We were taken upstairs in the Old Bailey to the canteen because another father kicked off. And this father came up and he looked at me and went, "I'm sorry." And I just want to say, we didn't cheer like you see in America. When you hear three young boys, one was 15, 16 and 19.
Yeah.
When you hear three young children crying in the dock, your heart just breaks for them.
Even though they've been laughing at you the previous day.
But they're children. They're not adults, they're children, you know. They were under the influence of drugs and drink that night. And what I say is this, it wasn't them that killed my son, it was the drug dealers out there.
And this all came out in court?
Yeah, that they were high on drugs and drink. But this father seeked me out and he held out his arms, he went, "I'm sorry," and I just went over and we cuddled each other.
This is the father of one of Christopher's killers?
Yeah, and 2 weeks later for sentencing we met again and he said to me, "I wanted you to hit me." He was taking his son's guilt on. And we talked and the police said they'd never seen such compassion between two fathers. And like I said to him, if my Chris got a lucky punch in, I could be standing where he was. It's just the way it is, isn't it?
Well, you say that, Ray, and you know that an awful lot of people would see things very differently. How long had elapsed before, how did you find out they'd got them, they'd caught them?
Oh, 11:30 that night.
They was because there were so many people around.
Yeah,
and
yeah, 11:30 that night they caught them and there was 28 witnesses to it all.
So that was, I mean, in a sense, in an incredibly horrible situation, you didn't have the horror of wondering if anyone was going to get away with it, if it was going to happen. Were you in the same place as Ray then, emotionally, by now?
I was an emotional wreck. I was just so angry.
And then you
I went home and I smashed my kitchen up.
Really?
Yeah.
I pulled everything off the walls. I was just going ape in this house, and I just lost it completely. And because I was riding on all of that rage, and rightly so, we have a right to be angry. And Ray would say over the period of that time, before the court case, there were moments when he was angry. But I never realised what he meant when he said, "You've got to choose to forgive, you've got to choose to move on," because I was drinking like a cup of poison and hoping it would poison them, and it wasn't doing anything.
So
it
the was, angrier you are...
It was just hurting me.
And this was still the case in court? This was... You
right
smashed the kitchen
the
up when you got
case.
Back from the...
Oh, absolutely. I went...
Well, how did you feel when he told you he'd been hugging the father of one of the killers?
She saw me.
I sat in the room and watched it, and I was gobsmacked. Actually gobsmacked. I think it was my daughter sat in the room, and I remember her saying afterwards she'd never seen anything like that. And the policeman, he said to me, "That is so, I've never seen so much compassion." And I think I began to think about that a little bit, about their parents. And in the court, during the court case, I watched their parents and I watched the shame on their faces and the pain. And they had to look past us to even look at the court. And the horror for them. You know, you just realise everybody's losing here. And yeah, they'll get their sons back physically one day, unlike us. But it will never be the same for any of us. So everyone's losing. Mm. And I guess some compassion started to come inside of me during that court case.
And it like a seed that... was yeah. tiny but began yeah. to began yeah. to grow.
I began to realise actually Ray's right, you know.
People react, obviously, you never know how you're going to react in a given situation until it actually happens. And I can sit here and listen to what you tell us and understand up to a point the reaction with the father who came towards you, the father who was remorseful and was partly destroyed and who wanted you to punch him. But the other father you mentioned was kicking off in the court, so the other father was behaving in a violent way, and yet you have to extend the same. You can't reserve forgiveness only for the people who behave in a nice way.
We have to forgive all of them.
Yes, exactly.
And you know what made it hard?
Well,
you're going to love this. They set us in the well of the court, in the well, by the door. The boys would come through the door, because they were on bail, walk past us and go into the dock. This would happen every day for 6 weeks, in and out, up and down. And we were as close to Vi now, to each other, in the foyer. There was no protection for them, there was no protection for us. They put you in a room downstairs, and then bring you up, and you're face to face with the person. And that's still happening today, we've been told.
Yes, it is. The first time you saw the three of them, and obviously there's a court case underway, it took 6 weeks, but you must have been, apart from in your sort of worst fears, you must have been fairly clear that it was them and that they were going to be found. You knew these boys had killed Christopher.
Yes, I did. I knew.
What went through your mind your heart the first time you saw them, in the flesh, as it were?
Rage and anger. And inside me, and then I looked and I thought, they're little boys.
The first day?
I know, you just see that, you see it. You look at them, and you just think, that's a little boy there, he's 15. You know? And I don't know, it's not like any court case, it's not like what you see on telly, it's not like that. You just feel really sad. Sad for everybody. You feel it.
You both do this thing where you speak as if it's obvious. Or you speak as if it's self-evident. You speak as if it's the most natural thing in the world.
Yeah.
And yet, you've said already that they were messing about in the dock and you're still sitting there seeing innocent
children.
I know why.
I know that all the laughter that they were showing, at the end of the court case, they were screaming and crying. One was holding his Rosie beads. He was shaking. And I knew that right from the beginning. I knew that was just bravado. They were just trying to put on a face. Just like the other father who was angry. The other father was trying to love his son in a very inappropriate way. He was telling him to lie. He was telling him. And I understand that. If you love your son, you want to do, you know, you want to help him. Mm. And it's a misguided love, isn't it?
Yes.
And you can see it is. But it's love. It's how he sees it.
Love's never rational.
And it's sad. It's terribly sad. And that's why it's so sad. Mm. Because you see all of those things taking place in front of you. And you just think, hang on a minute, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. And that's why compassion comes inside of you.
So when the verdict was delivered, you were probably not surprised, relieved, but I don't know.
We wanted justice, of course we did. Yeah.
People think, you know, they get justice and forgiveness mixed up.
Yes.
You can forgive, but you still cry for justice.
That's my next question, you've beaten me
sorry.
No, I don't apologise,
You see, that's two separate things, isn't it?
Well, it is to you, and yet, in that maelstrom of emotions, you could see how could you feel sorry for these people in the dock and yet also want them to be punished? That's where people get confused, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is going on inside of you, this rage and also this compassion. You have both things, and you're so confused too, you know? And it takes you a long time. It's like being in a car crash at 90 miles an hour. It takes you a time to take it on board, to work through it. And everybody's different.
Yeah. Well, clearly. And so the three were sentenced to, they were all found guilty of murder. Two got life with a minimum of 9 to 10 years. The 15-year-old, of course, got a different sentence, Her Majesty's pleasure, with a minimum of 6. They are then, in a way that hasn't changed for hundreds of years in this country, they are led from the court to the cells below, usually, and you are left high and dry in court.
What happens, from the day Christopher died to the end of the court case, we had everybody in our life, police, liaison officers, everything. But the minute they're found guilty, you're left on your own. And I think this is where a lot of marriages with murder breaks up. I don't even notice there's a lot of marriages when there's a murder, they break up.
Yes.
Because they don't know what's, you know, it's you're out of the limelight, ain't you, love?
Yeah.
You know?
Almost.
You've got all these people in telling you what to do and how to live and this, that, and then they just go, goodbye, we're finished.
So you've got lawyers, police, CPS.
Yeah.
Solicitors, the whole media as well, of course, journalists are interested in it, and then suddenly, verdict handed down.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's guilty led from the dock.
I don't know what to
Ray
do.
And Vi left hanging.
Yeah. And kids.
And of course, the children of Philip, and you haven't told me your daughter's name.
Amanda and Louis. Our other children,
Okay. And just the five of you left to.
Yeah.
try and put your lives back together.
Yeah. And where do you start?